Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Bhakti Vai Bhava ki
jai.
Rantaraj Srila Bhagavatam
jai.
Join the Taiko Premon. So where are we up to in this course? Chapter 9, text 46. What has happened in the last few chapters? Anything else? So we see in this chapter that the demigods, they attempt to kill Vritrasura, but being unable to do so, they throw their weapons at him. He simply swallows their weapons. And then they retreat and they begin to worship the Lord, and the Lord himself appears in front of them. And tonight we'll hear what his advice is. The Lord gives them advice on how they should deal with this demon, Vritrasura. Now it's very interesting, this personality. Vritrasura we'll hear about beginning from tomorrow night in the next chapter. It will describe his position. He's actually a very exalted personality. It hasn't been revealed as yet, actually, who he is. But we will see, actually, is a very important part of Bhagavatam, actually, which will be revealed in the next couple of weeks. So we will discuss that. So tonight we'll hear about how the Lord instructs the demigods to deal with Vritrasura, this demon, and then what they do. And in the next chapter, beginning from tomorrow night, we'll hear about how they are able to kill him. Then his personality will be revealed, which is the real essential part of this part of time, who he is. I should give your exams back next week. Please forgive me for taking time. Kormor Prabhu did a retreat 1 week ago at the farm, so I didn't have any time to mark exams. And then this weekend just gone, we did a wood chop, cut wood for the whole farm. Which took about 4 days of non-stop work, so I just haven't had time. I marked quite a few exams today, so by next week I'll have them to you. So please be patient. Forgive me for taking time. Then the week of the 18th and 19th of June, which is about 3 weeks from now, we'll have a week off. There'll be no classes, 18th, 19th. I'm going to have a break for a week. So no classes that week, 18th, 19th. I think the 16th, 17th, the temple is advertising there is a Sankirtan festival coming up. So all the devotees should participate in that festival to some degree. And you should encourage your bhakti vrikshi groups and so forth to participate in that festival to some degree also. Very important. No, that's a different thing. That's a kirtan festival. It's the week after that. There's a Sankirtan festival. Two different festivals. One is a kirtan festival, one is a Sankirtan festival. Okay, so it's hard keeping up with this temple, I know. I don't have the capacity to keep up with what goes on here. But we should try our best, and we should serve to the best of our ability. And we should do something, we should engage in these programs to some degree, as much as you can, for Prabhupada's pleasure. Prabhupada was the only one who could keep up with his program. He could keep up with the rest of us struggle to get over it. But we should participate in whatever degree we can. Okay, so tonight we'll go from verses 46 to 55. We'll finish the chapter. And then tomorrow night we'll begin chapter 10. We'll hear about Richard Surrey. A very, very remarkable personality is Richard Surrey. I'm looking forward to his next chapter. The next chapter, because then more his personality will be revealed. And the essence of the Bhagavatam is actually revealed at this point, like that, in this past, this next past, next chapter, when we hear about this personality.
He's also a devotee. He's also a devotee.
Yes. That's what will be manifest like that. But the type of devotee he is amazing. So we have to, we'll study this. Sri Shukadeva Swami continued, O King Parikshit, when the demigods offered the Lord their sincere prayers in this way, the Lord listened by his causeless mercy. Being pleased, he then replied to the demigods. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O beloved demigods, you have offered your prayers to me with great knowledge, and I am certainly most pleased with you. A person is liberated by such knowledge, and thus he remembers my exalted position, which is above the conditions of material life. Such a devotee is fully purified by offering prayers and full knowledge. This is the source of devotional service to me.
Another name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is Uttama Shloka, which means that he has offered prayers with selected verses. Bhakti means Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu, chanting and hearing about Lord Vishnu. Impersonalists cannot be purified, but they do not offer personal prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even though they sometimes offer prayers, the prayers are not directed towards the Supreme Person. Impersonalists somehow show their incomplete knowledge by addressing the Lord as being nameless. They always offer prayers indirectly, saying, you are this, you are that, but they do not know to whom they are praying. The devotee, however, always offers personal prayers. The devotee says, Govindam Adikrusham Tamaham Bhajam. I offer my respectful obeisances unto Govinda, unto Krishna. That is the way to offer prayers. If one continues to offer such personal prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is eligible to become a pure devotee and return home back to Godhead.
What are the points in this couple?
The devotee is offering personal prayers, because he knows Krishna as a person and great love and affection. He sincerely appreciates him.
Anything else?
One quality of devotee is being a poet.
What is that?
One quality of devotee is being a poet.
What is that called in Sanskrit? Kavi. Any other point?
And you were talking about the importance of reciting prayers. So he was saying that as practicing devotees, we must learn some of the nice prayers which are there in the Bhagavatam, like Kunti Maharani's prayers or the Koti Bhis, which is also like prayers which is for Krishna. So saying because at the time of death it is very, or at the time of any calamity, if that something like that comes up, then if we have tried to memorize these prayers and we sing them in front of the Lord, for prayers, you see, surrender comes first. So, I think it's very important to understand and memorize these prayers so you can recite them during calamities.
I was seeing a lecture by Bhakti Shastri Guru, Bharat Bhakti Bharat Bhagavat Maharaj, Bharat Madanapur. So, and he was going back and giving Bhakti Shastri classes. So he was asked that even Mayavadis are chanting Hare Krishna, especially reference to curly haired Baba, Sai Baba, who was also making everyone chant Hare Krishna. So even he is, whatever it is, at least people are chanting. So is he not right in that way? Will he not get Sukruti? So Maharaj quoted some devotee who said that even a watch which does not work, which is useless, shows the right time twice a day. So therefore, it's not that Mayavadi's prayers have any significance. It's just incidental that they are also doing it. But they are not doing it with any meaning.
What sort of chanting is that?
Pratibimba.
Pratibimba Nama Vashi. But actually they are saying that they are Krishna's. This is that Nama Vashi.
Yeah, it's called Nama Bus because they get liberation from them. They can even go to Brahma Jyoti from the chant, but it's up or up. Any other point?
Yeah. As Mother, you were saying, we should also remember the prayers of Acharyas, these Acharyas, Narottam Das Thakur, how sincerely and meaningful prayer they have. I mean, the Narottam Das Thakur, Mahareda.
So the process of bhakti is very simple. It is based upon the principles of Shravana and Kirtana. So simply by hearing and chanting. So basically it requires hardly any energy at all to do this process. It's like now we're just doing Shravana. So we're just sitting in one place and we're just listening. We're doing kirtan, same thing in chant our japa, we just sit in one place and we just chant. So practically we don't even do anything externally. There's no active engagement with the senses, in one sense, of course there is, but it's not an active situation. But still, just through that very, very simple process of just hearing and chanting, then we make practically, we can make unlimited spiritual advancement. So Prabhupada explains in the first chapter of the first canto of the Bhagavatam, what is attractive to Krishna when we chant his name, or when we glorify him. Prabhupada explains, it is the psychology of a person that when someone is glorifying you, you become pleased. And we all know that experience. If someone glorifies us, we become very happy. We very much enjoy being glorified. So Krishna is actually, because he's a person, he very much enjoys being glorified. Now the difference is that Krishna is meant to be glorified. And when we become glorified, we have to learn to pass that glorification on to our spiritual master. In other words, we should not accept it for ourselves, even though at this point in time we do, to some degree. So Krishna, he naturally accepts the glorification. It is our constitutional position to glorify Krishna, to hear about Krishna and to glorify Krishna. And Prabhupada explains in the spiritual world, everyone is engaged in hearing about Krishna and glorifying Krishna. Just like Mother Yashoda, she is churning butter with the other gopis, and while they're doing that, they're singing songs about Krishna. So everyone is hearing about Krishna, they're glorifying Krishna. That is the process of bhakti, which is eternal and takes place in the spiritual world. This is described by Haridas Thakur in the Harinam Chintamani that the other processes, such as karma and jnana, they are means to an end. Whereas the process of bhakti is the means, but it is also the end. In other words, we hear about Krishna, we chant the glories of Krishna in sadhana, so that in sadhya, or in perfection, when we go back to the spiritual world, we'll be eternally engaged in these same activities.
hearing about Krishna and chanting his glories. So in the spiritual world, everyone is simply engaged in that activity. And in this material world, we are practicing to perfect that activity. Now, we need to develop a nama ruchi. A nama ruchi, or Vasudev Katha ruchi, Bhagavatam says. Mahaprabhu's entire movement is based upon this principle of nama ruchi. To develop taste for hearing the holy name. And Bhagavatam says, to get a taste for Vasudev Katha, Krishna Katha. This is our principle. So, by this simple process of hearing and chanting, we need to develop a taste for hearing and chanting, so that it becomes relishable. Rupa Goswami, our principal acharya, has said that when we chant the holy name, we should desire to have millions of ears and millions of tongues. Because he says that one tongue and two ears are not sufficient to taste all the nectar which is contained within the holy name. For many of us, we can hardly even stay asleep. Sorry. Awake when we chant our name. So this is not nama ruchi. At least we don't fall asleep in the Bhagavatam class. Generally, at least in this class. In the morning class, you have to try harder to keep people awake. Usually they're pretty good. I have a system when I'm giving class. If someone falls asleep, then I look at them and I wait for them to open their eyes. And then I say, actually, one should not fall asleep in the Bhagavatam class. And then they become very self-conscious, and everyone looks at them like that, and then so it very quickly solves the problem. So generally in this class we don't have a problem. It's very rare I see someone fall asleep in this class, because people are voluntarily coming to hear. So we need to develop a taste for hearing and chanting about Krishna. There should be something, Prabhupada said we should hear the Bhagavatam with rapt attention. That should be the mood when we're hearing the Bhagavatam. And similarly, when we're chanting the holy name, it should be like that. It should be rapt attention. You should be absorbed in hearing and chanting about Krishna. We need to develop a katha ruchi, Krishna katha, to hear about Krishna, to chant the holy name. It should be a taste. Then you can do it perpetually. And then you feel like Prabhupada says, why 16 rounds? Why not 16,000? Rounds. Devotees should feel like that when he's chanting. 16 rounds is not enough. I want to chant 16,000 rounds today. So devotees should have that feeling. We have to cultivate that. We should feel that is coming, or we're progressing in our chanting. Each year we should feel that the chanting is becoming more relishable, easier to absorb ourselves in. We should be getting more desire to hear the Bhagavatam. Now, Prabhupada also makes the point that impersonalists or Mayavadis, they cannot perform bhakti. They think that they're performing bhakti. Sometimes they even say this, they're performing bhakti yoga. Or they say karma yoga. Like this. They make these points that they are performing some sort of bhakti or some sort of yoga activity. But factually speaking, unless one is a personalist, or unless one accepts that Bhagavan, or the personality of Godhead, is the absolute truth, what you're performing is not technically bhakti. If your perception of the absolute truth is impersonal, if you think Brahma Jyoti is the supreme attribute of the absolute truth, then your activities are not bhakti. Because you cannot perform devotion to the Brahma Jyoti, to a light. So Prabhupada points this out. These impersonalists, they say, sometimes they even say it, we are doing bhakti yoga. Or they say, we're doing karma yoga. Now, but what is that activity? Who is it dedicated to? Therefore, it is not bhakti. Bhakti is simply performed by the bhaktas, or the devotees, who accept Bhagavan as supreme. The impersonalists, they put up the absolute truth in the opposite way. Bhagavatam says, Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavan Diti Shabjite. So the absolute truth is in three phases or three levels. And Bhagavan realization is the topmost level of realization. But they turn it upside down. They say that Brahman is the source of Bhagavan. Whereas the Bhagavatam says that Bhagavan is the source of Brahman. So if someone has that upside down or incorrect understanding, then they're not performing bhakti.
it is simply sentiment like that, or it is simply covered with envy. And when one serves Krishna with envy, it covers the service. It takes away from the service, and the service loses its attraction to Krishna. If one has envy, even for a devotee, when we're envious to Krishna or to the devotees, then it weakens the bhakti. Krishna does not relish it so much. So the devotee, he serves Krishna out of spontaneous love, ultimately. And the impersonalist, he does not do this, so therefore Krishna does not relish. That's why Prabhupada points out the demons and the Mayavadis get the same destination. Because they're both envious of Krishna, so therefore they get the same destination. So, any points? They go to Brahma Jyoti.
Oh.
By Krishna's mercy. He killed Shishupal, and everyone saw Shishupal merged into him. All the demons got the same. All the demons in Vrindavan Lila, they also merged into Krishna. That is Krishna's mercy on them. Any other point?
When you were saying psychology of the person, I'll give you one mundane example. There's a young boy, and he's praised by two or three girls. He feels so much false ego. That is the material part of the life.
When a young
but
boy.
Krishna's psychology, he feels very happy when we chant his name.
So how does this Maya spoke?
They Bhagavad Gita, like Krishna spoke, Bhagavad Gita is God, so they don't think his person is God, and he himself
says in Gita that Brahmano hi Krishna.
Like, I am the source
of his Brahmano. So, what do you think?
They
say
it is the unborn within Krishna.
Mm.
They live in the
purpose
like that.
They're very confused people.
Mm.
They're very confused. So, one time I was at the loft, Urban Yoga. Dave Marita Swami was giving a class, and there were some Mayavadis sitting there, and they kept making points. They've been very polite, but they kept making points. And every time they said something, Maharaj said, "You're envious of Krishna." That's all he said to them. Every time they asked a question or made a point, he just said, "You're envious of Krishna." And all the devotees become very uncomfortable. That's all Maharaj would say to them. Every time they said to them, Maharaj would say, "You're envious of Krishna." That's all he would say. So they never came back. Which was Maharaj's purpose. So,
truth is bitter.
What's that?
Truth is bitter.
Yeah, to them it is bitter. It's true, they're envious of Krishna, therefore they cannot understand. They're very confused. Any other point?
I was listening to Mohan Prabhu's lecture, and that lecture was about the importance of developing a taste for hearing and chanting. So you are saying, especially in Indian temples, like where there is so many devotees and few services to be shared by the devotees, so you are saying that people are so, they get so restless if their service is taken away, and they feel the temple management is doing politics and all that, like all these discussions start happening if some service is taken away. But he said nobody says that politics is being done if they miss a class. So he said that is because everybody wants to do services because that is something practical and that will be seen. But he said by the course of time or by the course of someone getting much more ability than you, that service is going to go from you. But he said if you have developed your taste for hearing and chanting from the beginning of your devotional life, that nobody can take away from you. And then he was quoting Rupa Goswami. He said that whenever Rupa Goswami, you hear Acharya, they say, please give us millions of your tongues and ears so that we can chant more and hear more. They are not asking for millions of hands so that we can serve more. If you see all the prayers of all the Acharyas, they always ask to develop their taste for hearing and chanting.
It's a good point. That's one advantage of staying in the West. You don't have to worry about people taking your service off you. It's the opposite. Too much service. Okay, any other points?
or best of the intelligent demigods. Although it is true that nothing is difficult for one to obtain when I am pleased with him, a pure devotee whose mind is exclusively fixed upon me does not ask me for anything but the opportunity to engage in devotional service. Chaitanya.
When the demigods finished offering their prayers, they anxiously waited for their enemy to crush over to be killed. This means that the demigods are not pure devotees. Although without difficulty one can get anything he desires, if the Lord is pleased, the demigods aspire for material profit by pleasing the Lord. The Lord wanted the demigods to pray for another devotional service, but instead they prayed for an opportunity to kill their enemy. This is the difference between a pure devotee and a devotee on the material platform. Indirectly, the Lord regretted that the demigods did not ask for pure devotional service.
Any points that are interesting?
This regard, Bhajan Kapoor in his lecture, he said that in Vrindavan, one old lady, she was carrying a bundle of sticks on her head, and she was going, and suddenly the old bunch fell down. Oh, Krishna, please come and help me to put back. Then Krishna, when she called out, Krishna comes. So what do you want? You called me for? Can you please put this, like, Krishna can give so much more, and she just asked him to put like that, like, demigods, even though the Lord can give so much more, which is permanent eternal benefit, but the demigods are praying for just to get back their power and kill the people. He can give so much more than that, that they ask the Krishna just reciprocate.
And what do we pray for? Any other points?
I think for the time being, for that time being, the Rasula needed to be killed because he was the problem. It's not that so someone needed to do it, and without Krishna's help, you can't do it. So she really had to help for that. She had to pray for that.
Yeah, Prabhupada's pointing out the demigods are attached to their position. That's the point. They have material desires. So, Chaitanya Charitamrita points out that if one remembers Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even the most difficult things become extremely easy. And if one forgets the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even the easiest things become very difficult. So I don't know if you've had personal experience of this in your life. I have had it. That if you forget the Lord, then even the easiest things have become so difficult to do. But if you remember Krishna, sometimes even things which you think you can't imagine how it will get done, and easily it happens. So that is the potency of remembering the Lord. So Prabhupada is pointing this out, that simply we need to develop this faith in Krishna. Sometimes devotees become very anxious about so many things. Just like I live far away in the forest, but then I come, and whenever I come to the temple, then when I walk in, devotees start telling me so many of their problems. They have this problem, they have that problem, they have that problem, they have that problem. And basically, there is only one answer to everything. Remember. Come to the park. You're advancing so nicely. So pure in your heart. So, besides come to the farm, which I often do, then the main advice we give to the devotees is simply you have to learn to remember Krishna. Because this is the one solution to all of our problems, is that if you remember Krishna, even the difficult things become easy. And if you forget Krishna, even the easy things become difficult. So that is the actual solution to all the problems. Of course, when we counsel the devotees, we have to
listen to them, we have to give them advice and help them according to their particular situation. Just like actually I was having a prasadam tonight, and one devotee, she came to speak to me. I've known her for a long time. So she came to me and I said, how are you? And she said, well, actually, there are problems. So I said, what are the problems? She told me the problems. And then there was another devotee sitting there, who I know not so well, but he was sitting there. And then I said to her, what is your problem like that? And he said to me, you should not ask her, what is the problem? And then I thought, then how will she feel protected? How will she feel like someone is looking after her if I don't ask her what her problem is? If I don't say to her, what is the problem? And then try to give her some advice based on the particular problem, she will not feel sheltered in her spiritual life. So this is actually the system. That if the devotee has a particular problem, then you have to deal with the problem. You can't just be generic. And you can't just say, well, if you just remember Krishna, everything will be okay. You have to look after the devotees so they feel like they're being protected in devotional service. But simultaneously, the actual answer to all the problems is the same. You have to remember Krishna. And the reason we're having any problem in the material world is for this one reason. We've forgotten Krishna. And it's because we're in the material world for this one reason. It's because we've forgotten Krishna. So if you remember Krishna, everything becomes very easy. And if you forget Krishna, everything becomes very difficult. And we see in the material world, everything becomes very difficult when you forget Krishna. But even when you remember him, even when you're going through so many difficulties, somehow you can get through it. Krishna gives you the strength. And even sometimes you're going through the most difficult situations, but you feel aloof from those situations. It's almost like you're just envisioning it happening. But you're not actually feeling like you're actually absorbed in the situation. When our consciousness becomes a little bit transcendental, we feel aloof from the situation. So Prabhupada is pointing out that we have to remember Krishna. This is actually the answer to all of the problems. And this whole pastime, which is about to be revealed to us more in the next chapter, is emphasizing especially to us that devotional service is ahoituki. Ahoituki means it is causeless, unmotivated. This is pure devotional service. That's why the Bhagavatam, and Krishna does this all the way through the Bhagavad Gita when he is teaching. Krishna will say, he'll give you one example, like when he's speaking the Bhagavad Gita, and then the next verse, he'll give you the exact opposite. Because he wants you to understand, this is the right thing, this is the wrong thing. Or this is the wrong thing, but this is the right thing. In other words, what is the best way to understand what is black? You have to understand what is white. So, what are we seeing in this pastime? What we should be and what we should not be. Because the Acharyas and Srila Prabhupada are telling us we should not be like the demigods. At this point in time, we're not even as good as the demigods. Our devotional service is not even as high as them yet. In other words, we do have material desires in our heart, and even we may not verbalize them in front of the deities, but the deities know what we're thinking. Maybe you don't go in front of the deities and say, oh, give me this and give me that, but in the heart there's so many material desires which are there. But the demigods have this kind of consciousness, but you'll see Vritrasura, he doesn't have this kind of consciousness. His consciousness is actually pure devotional service. And we'll see actually in this pastime, this will be explained by the Acharyas, this is where pure devotional service becomes the most perfectly revealed so far in the Bhagavatam. This is in the consciousness of Vritrasura. Because you'll see what he does in the next chapter. He says to Indra, just kill me. And Indra says, you know, he's been given the weapon to kill him. And he says, no, don't worry, it'll work. Have confidence, it will work. Take me now, kill me. But this is pure devotional service. Who could do this? Now, what is the consciousness of someone who's so selfless, who so much wants to be with Krishna? And he says, if the body's ready to go, let it go. I have no attachment left in this world. So this is pure devotional service. So the Bhagavatam is teaching what we should be and what we should not be simultaneously. So, any points?
For example, if somebody dies in the battlefield, they go to heaven, and if they die, like devotees, they go back home back to Godhead. So anyway, I'm going to go back home back to Godhead, so you kill like that. So dying in the battlefield, there are two glorious deaths. One is to die on the battlefield, and the other one is by going back home back to Godhead.
Where did you get that one from?
It's there in the, from the Gita. Two glorious deaths. It says at the very end, next chapter. I'm going ahead, but because you were telling about the Sutrasura, I had come. It's there, the two glorious.
But you are going ahead. Now I've got nothing to say next week in the club. You went ahead.
So the other day to someone, and he said when he was a small child, he said everyone was thinking he's very strange because he always loved to go to cemetery, the right of thing, and then I asked him why did you go? And he said, because I believe that everyone there goes to back to his father, to Krishna, and I wanted to see them all. And I was, and that was as a small child, and no one kind of preached him too much, but he was thinking, and he said, I thought, I thought these people, they have to be sorry, those are staying, but these who are going, they are going to the Father, they are happy, they will be well. You know, and that's why he had this opinion. So like with Trasura, he was happy because he was going, and actually Indra and the others should have been sorry.
Any other thoughts?
When you were asking the lady how you are, that shows you hearing it too. Instead of criticism, hearing it too. And about his answer, you're asking for coming to the farm. If you want company of devotees, so it's very good.
Yeah, I'd save a lot of petrol if I didn't have to come here. What do we do every second week at the farm? So, okay. Those that think material assets to be everything or to be the ultimate goal of life are called misers, creepiness. They do not know the ultimate necessity of the soul. Moreover, if one awards that which is desired by such fools, he must also be considered foolish. So, do you want to know that?
There are two classes of men, namely Sadhana and Abrahmana. Abrahmana is one who knows Brahman, the absolute truth, and who thus knows his real interest. A Kripana, however, is one who has a material bodily concept of life. Not knowing how to utilize his human or demigod life, a Kripana is attracted by things created by the material modes of nature. The Kripanas, who always desire material benefits, are foolish, whereas the Brahmanas, who always desire spiritual benefits, are intelligent. If a Kripana, not knowing his self-interest, foolishly asks for something material, one who awards it to him is also foolish. Krishna, however, is not a foolish person. He is supremely intelligent. If someone comes to Krishna asking for material benefits, Krishna does not award him the material things he desires. Instead, the Lord gives him intelligence so that he will forget his material desires and become attached to the Lord's lotus feet. In such cases, although the Kripana offers prayers to Lord Krishna for material things, the Lord takes away whatever material possessions the Kripana has and gives him the self to become a devotee. As stated by the Lord in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 22.39, since I am very intelligent, why should I give this fool material prosperity? Instead, I shall induce him to take the nectar of the shelter of my lotus feet and make him forget illusory material enjoyment. If one sincerely prays to God for material possessions in exchange for devotional service, the Lord, who is not foolish like such an unintelligent devotee, shows him special favor by taking away whatever material possessions he has and gradually giving him intelligence to be satisfied only by rendering service to his lotus feet. Sri Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments in this regard that if a foolish child requests his mother to give him poison, the mother, being intelligent, will certainly not give him poison even though he requests it. A materialist does not know what to accept, that to accept material possessions means to accept poison or the repetition of birth and death. An intelligent person, a brahmana, aspires for liberation from material bondage. That is the real self-interest of a human being.
So, how do you use purpose?
The Lord seems to be taunting her.
Sometimes the senior personality points out our defects. So sometimes the guru will say it like this, or the senior devotee will say it like that on behalf of Krishna. Sometimes if you meet Krishna, he may say it like that. It's pointing out to the demigods that actually, you know, what are you asking for?
Just a question. The demigods seem to be of a very high consciousness, and apparently they are asking for something materialistic. I mean, being in the top level of their consciousness of what they could be, and they are seeing the Lord in front of them to ask for something like to kill an enemy. It doesn't sound right.
That's what Krishna's saying. Mm-hmm. This doesn't sound right. Yeah. If you read the verse, he says, those who think material assets to be everything or to be the ultimate goal of life are called misers. Yeah. He says to them, he says, you're a creeper. So it's not right.
Even at that level where these people are so highly elevated.
If Krishna came in front of you right now, he might say some things to you also. And whether or not you could just immediately come to the level of pure devotional service or not. Maybe you could, maybe you couldn't. Any other point?
The best example is Mahaprabhu. He is God. He is coming himself as telling us we can do anything. That's the best example.
Who
is
that?
Something is doing an invitation. I was thinking I had thrown the mask out of the card. Dented, and I was thinking I didn't break the Krishna, and I was thinking, oh, I wish someone hit the card and paid for it because I did not have the money. And it actually happened while I was driving, someone hit me exactly on that spot, and that only that was damaged. And the man straight away paid me cash because he didn't want to lose the insurance. And I was like, wow, I couldn't believe it manifested, you know, I didn't pray for it. I was just thinking, you know. and then afterwards, I had a car accident. It was night time and it was raining, and the light suddenly changed in this intersection which I was coming, and I put the brakes down, but the car skidded, so I hit another car. My car was written off, the other car was written off. Then I was thinking, wow, you know, this, although, you know, Krishna fulfilled my desire, but, you know, I felt this was kind of a reaction, you know, and I thought of it, why someone should pay me? You know, why should I expect someone to pay for my car? You know, and I was thinking, I should not desire. And then I realized, how actually our desires, whether we pray for them or not, you know, they get fulfilled, and that's what's causing the chain of reactions. And that time I became aware I have to be careful what I'm thinking. And I went in front of Radha Giridhari and I was praying, please Krishna, this crazy mind of mine is really crazy. I'm trying to ignore it. You don't listen to it and don't fulfill it. I don't want to get into trouble. You know, I'm trying to ignore it. So I think it really made me think a lot. Not only what we pray, but also what we think.
Well, you don't have a car
anymore? Better not. Don't drive anymore. That was the last
one. Demigods are like much more elevated than us, and if they have such a consciousness, what's our hope for?
You don't have any hope. You're
only hope is that you come to the top.
Yeah, we see that in the Purport, Prabhupada writes that Krishna takes away the material desire, takes away the material for Krishna also, but in case of Guru Maharaj, Krishna did fulfill his material desire.
Yeah, the point I was going to make after I studied this today is that in the fifth canto there is one verse where it says that Krishna may fulfill the devotee's desire, but not in such a way that the devotee will ever desire that thing again.
Yes.
So that's my understanding as to what the Bhagavad Gita is teaching us. That if you have a material desire, Krishna may fulfill that if he chooses. But if he does fulfill your desire, it will be in a way that you will never desire that thing again. Or gradually you will lose your attachment to it. And I've experienced that many times. I mean, sometimes I've just had material desires as a devotee, and you know, wanted a particular thing, and then Krishna gave it to me, and then a few days later he just ruined the whole thing. So it makes you think about the thing, and you think about it for a long time, and then he gives it to you, and then you think, oh, I'm such a fool. You know, I've been thinking about this thing, and then Krishna's given it to me, and then he ruins the whole thing. And then you feel even more foolish. So then hopefully next time that you desire it, you won't desire it as strongly as you desired it the previous time. Very hard for us to give up our material desires. No? The nature of the material world is that when there is a difficult situation, we all become very detached. You know, when our marriage is not going well, we say, okay, I'm going to take something else. Okay. And the wife thinks, I'm never going to see this guy ever again. I'm just going to go and live with my mother. I hope he never ever contacts me ever again. Like that. But then, in a few days, then we're all back and we're attached again. Even more than before. So gradually it has to, we have to feel it's coming down. Gradually. It takes time. That's the point. And this is a great test for devotees, because sometimes devotees think the process is not working. Because I've been practicing for so long, but still all these desires are there. But at least you should feel that they're becoming less over time. Mm. And that the desire for Krishna consciousness is becoming stronger over time. And we have to feel that it's taking place. But be patient. That's why Rupa Goswami says, be patient. Dharyat means be patient, because it takes a long time, actually. Do not become disheartened. Even the same desires when you had the first day you joined the temple, they're still there 20 years later. But hopefully they've become less, that's all. But you have to be patient, because it doesn't happen quickly. It takes a long time. Any points?
I have a question. By preaching to Yogi Grama, came to know that few people I spoke to, they worship only Krishna, especially from Gujarati background. They are very pious, right? They worship Krishna as a good version from generations. And they do mention that, you know, whatever we are, that's because of Krishna, that business is prospering, or all the material desires they talk about. They approach Krishna without understanding that he is the supreme. Like, you know, normally people approach demigods, they think one of them. So Krishna is also fulfilling their desires, even though they don't have the understanding. So how does it go with this verse that said,
you'll take it away in due course of time. That's all. It's like sometimes the devotees who are not so advanced, then Krishna will treat them differently to devotees who are more sincere or more advanced. So if you're more of a neophyte devotee, because there are so many neophyte devotees who are very, very materialistic in their consciousness, and you see a lot of people come to the temple and they, you know, they put money in the hundi, and it's very evident that they're praying for material things. So Krishna may reciprocate with them because they're on such a low level. So then he gives them what they want, but then later on, then in due course of time, he ruins it.
Mm-hmm.
But for us, because if we're a little bit more sincere, he'll ruin it more quickly. So that's a sign that you're making advance.
I think Krishna will respect Prabhupada's desires on the level. If they don't want him, then he will give them a material desire. But to Daksha, you know, he performed so many meditations, he gave him what he wanted. because
yeah,
he never
gives
not
it
to
go
back.
He always ruins it in due course of time, that's the point.
I think we are ruining everything in due course of time, not he.
He helps out. There's a verse that, if you read in about three more verses, he says that himself. He says exactly that point. If that's what they want, then I will give it to them, but not in such a way that they will want that. So Krishna, he may give them material desire, but only for a period of time. And then how long can you enjoy it for anyway? Because sooner or later, everything gets taken away. So. Any other points?
Is
holiness,
is the
holiness
farming was
making
a point on Krishna's this? Dhanudal Maharaj. He was making a point that when the material desire manifests in the mind of a devotee, Krishna watches the devotee. So then devotee has a two option. Either to go for the desire or to tolerate it. So if he uses his wisdom and transcendental intelligence to control the desire and to tolerate the urge, at that point of time, Krishna swiftly acts and physically takes on that desire. So there is, until the last moment, Krishna allows a play for the free will. If the devotee says, "Now I want to go for it," and Krishna says, "That's fine." He just facilitates. So, since the time when Krishna acts is, he accuses for egoism, it's still endeavor on the part of the devotee to control the rush. At that point, it has to be quickly complete and just fight from the desire.
A pure devotee who is fully accomplished in the science of devotional service will never instruct a foolish person to engage in fruitive activities for material enjoyment, not to speak of helping him in such activities. Such a devotee is like an experienced physician who never encourages a patient to eat food injurious to his health, even if the patient desires it. Can you read the first paragraph?
Yeah. Here is the difference between the benedictions awarded by the demigods and those awarded by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Devotees of the demigods ask for benediction simply for sense gratification, and therefore they have been described in Bhagavad Gita 7.28, bereft of intelligence. Kames te stare dhatna jnana prapandyante anya devata tantam niyamam. Those whose minds are distorted by material desire surrender to demigods and follow the particular rules and regulations of worship according to their own nature. Conditions are generally bereft of intelligence because of profound desire for sense gratification. They do not know what benedictions to ask. Therefore, non-devotees are advised to any shastra to worship various demigods to achieve material benefits. For example, if one wants a beautiful wife, he is advised to worship Uma or Goddess Durga. If one wants to be cured of a disease, he is advised to worship the Sun God. All requests for benediction from demigods, however, are due to material lust. The benediction will be finished at the end of the cosmic manifestation, along with those who bestow them. If one approaches Lord Vishnu for benediction, Lord will give him a benediction that will help him return home back to God. This is also confirmed by Lord Himself, Bhagavad Gita. Tesham Sadhyuktanam, Pastam Piri Purugam, Dadami Bhuti Yogam Tam, Yen Maam Opiyantite. Lord Vishnu or Krishna instructs a devotee who constantly engages in his service how to approach him at the end of this. Of his material body. The Lord says, Jan Kramtame Divyam, Evam Yogeshi Tatva, Yaktya Deham Kunajam, Neti Mame. For he knows the transmitter of my appearance and his activity does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode. O Arjuna, this is the benediction of Lord Vishnu, Krishna. After giving up his body, the devotee returns home back to him.
What are the thoughts?
I heard about analogy regarding this verse.
other points?
Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that I've lost his even sitting in intelligence. So what are the plans we are making with that lost intelligence? Will be just for Sanskrit Krishna. It's always better to ask for the guidance from a person who has the spiritual intelligence other than going through your own intelligence.
So, we have to learn to ask Krishna for the correct thing. Because Krishna will give you basically what you ask for. So from our side, we have to learn to desire the right thing. Because I remember even when I first joined the temple, there was one devotee. He'd been a devotee for a number of years when I first came, and he used to get up very early every morning, finish all these rounds by 6 o'clock, and then read the Bhagavatam for 1 hour, for Guru Puja, in very strict sadhana like that. But it was very evident that he had strong material desires. So he's performing his devotional service, but there was some motivation within there. And then in due course of time, he stopped his sadhana and he became very wealthy. And he went off and ran his business and everything, but then he stopped practicing his sadhana and performing service and chanting his rounds and all these things. So if you have these things within the heart, Krishna will fulfill them. Nama Chintamani Krishna Chaitanya Rasavidya. So the holy name is Chintamani. So if you approach the holy name with material desires, the holy name can easily fulfill those desires. And Krishna can easily give you what you want. But if you approach Krishna spiritually motivated, then Krishna can easily award that also. But he will test you first. That's why bhakti, when you get to the higher realms of bhakti, it is called sudulabha. Bhava bhakti is rarely attained. Why? Because when you have bhava bhakti, you begin to control Krishna. And prema bhakti is Sri Krishna Kashani, which means Krishna becomes controlled. So that's why Krishna will test you. If you are attempting to make advancement, Krishna will test you. Is this really what you want? Are you going to stick at this even when I put these obstacles in your path? We still stay fixed in my devotional service. So Krishna will give you what you want, but you have to see what your desires are. And when you begin to say, or when you begin to realize in your heart that actually you desire Krishna, Krishna will say, do you really desire that? And then Krishna will test you with the strongest of all the anattas, which is pratishtha. Krishna will test you with that one. Because pratishtha means I want to become prominent. So Krishna will see, will you still do this devotional service even though you're becoming prominent? It means subtly within your heart, of course you'll keep doing the service, you'll keep giving the classes, you'll keep doing the preaching and all those things, but Krishna is seeing what's going on in here. Are you doing this for me, or are you beginning to do it more and more because you're getting reputation? And you enjoy the recognition that you're getting. So this is what Krishna is testing over time. And Krishna will hold back. I mean, you can go on to very advanced levels of devotional service, but still not attain Krishna. Bahu janma kadiyadi shvava. Bahu janma means you can go on for lifetimes doing the same. You can even be a very advanced devotee. You can even have many disciples and followers, but you may not get Krishna. So Krishna is testing all the time this thing. So he will give you what you want. But you have to see what it is that you want. And it's very subtle. Mahaprabhu in the Gundicha pastime, he went in and he cleaned the temple once, and then he went back and cleansed it a second time. And Prabhupada explains in the purport, Bhakti Santa Saraswati, this is symbolic of the second cleansing is much more difficult. The first cleansing is giving up the the first cleansing is following the regulative principles, giving up the gross attachments. So again, we do that, but then it's the second cleansing, which is the difficult cleansing. Okay, we can follow the principles, but now we're going to start working on the very subtle things. And that's much more difficult to cleanse. These things linger on and on and on. And they're very hard to uproot. Pratishtha is very hard to uproot. It's a very powerful weed. And it looks exactly like the bhakti creeper, and it can be very large, and it's very hard to pull out. If you come to the farm, you'll see. Very hard to pull out the weeds. Okay. And when you pull them out, then they come back again. That's why to really realize our philosophy, you have to stay at the farm. If we keep doing it together, people will get
What would you say if somebody wants to do a lot of preaching? Do you still think Krishna will hold on to it?
No, Krishna will help the devotee. I know myself, sometimes there's things which I just could not overcome. But I kept trying and I kept trying and I kept trying, but I could not overcome. Then Krishna helped me, and then something got removed. Okay, so if you keep trying in devotional service and you're sincere, then even though you cannot give up certain things, Krishna will help you to remove them. If you're sincere. Even if you can't do it yourself, Krishna can help. That's why it says Nashta Prayeshva Bhadreshu Nicham Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavad Yutamashloke Bhakti Bhavati Nashtipu. So Prabhupada says in the purport that Krishna will cleanse the heart. Okay. If you can't do it, then Krishna will help. Any other one?
So if you ask, for material things in order to increase our devotional aspect, how does that change?
It's a little dangerous. It's a little dangerous.
Yeah.
Be careful. Yeah, just be careful. You see in Prabhupada's example, Prabhupada wasn't really doing like that. He was just preaching and then Krishna gives it. So when you start asking for specific things, it can become... Because the point is that it's up to Krishna if he wants to get that thing or not. You might say, Krishna, I want this particular thing, but it may not be Krishna's desire. Yeah, he might, like Prabhupada said, he had the argument with Krishna. Yeah, he said that I want to go to the West and preach as a rich man. And Krishna says, no, as a poor man. So they had an argument, and Krishna won. Right? And then Krishna sent him as a poor man. So you may have your desire, but Krishna may have a different way of doing things. So it's probably better not to ask. I don't ask Krishna generally. I don't think I ask Krishna for specific things. Sometimes I think, oh, you know, if you give me a small facility, we can do more. But I think that it's dangerous when you begin to ask for specific things, because it may not be Krishna's desire. So if you just preach sincerely, automatically Krishna will just, like with Prabhupada. Yeah, he just preached sincerely and Krishna just sent so much facility. So just be careful, because then subtly sometimes it's hard to know whether it's your mind or it's your soul. You may think it's in here, but actually it's up here. And even sometimes you think, you know, oh no, it's here, but after some time you begin to realize, no, actually there's stuff going on up here. So just be careful. Okay. O Maghavan, Indra, O good fortune unto you. I advise you to approach the exalted saint, Dadyansha Didichi. He has become very accomplished in knowledge, vows, and austerities, and his body is very strong. Go ask him for his body without delay. That saintly Dadyansha, who is also known as Didichi, personally assimilated the spiritual science and then delivered it to the Ashwini Kumaras. It is said that Dadyansha gave them mantras through the head of a horse. Therefore the mantras are called Ashwashira. After obtaining the mantras of spiritual science from Didichi, the Ashwini Kumaras became Jivan Mukta, liberated even in this life. So, when we approach a saintly personality, we should approach him with the right motivation. And we should approach the saintly person for the right thing. We should approach the saintly person to get spiritual knowledge, Vidyajnana. We should not waste the time of the saintly person by asking trivial questions which have no importance. And we should not approach them for mundane benedictions. but rather we should go to the saintly person to get spiritual knowledge, Krishna conscious philosophy and enlightenment, to get their realizations. So if you read the purport here, it's very interesting. There's a pastime which is told about how the Ashwini Kumaras came to Dadichi. And then it's very interesting. Dadyansha's invincible protective covering known as the Narayan Kavacha was given to Twashta, who delivered it to his son, Vishwarupa, from whom you have received it. Because of this Narayan Kavacha, Dadichi's body is now very strong. You should therefore beg him for his body. When the Ashwini Kumaras beg for the Dadyansha's body on your behalf, he will surely give it because of affection. Do not doubt this, for the Dadyansha is very experienced in religious understanding. When the Dadyansha awards you his body, Vishwakarma will prepare a thunderbolt from his bones. This thunderbolt will certainly kill Vritrasura, because it will be invested with my power. When Vritrasura is killed because of my spiritual strength, you will regain your strength, weapons and wealth. Thus, there will be all good fortune for all of you. Although Vritrasura can destroy all the three worlds, do not fear that he will harm you. He is also a devotee and will never be envious of you. So what is the consciousness of these two personalities, Dadichi and Vritrasura? That whether they are living or dying, completely selfless in their service to Krishna. Dadichi did not mind. They said, we need your body in order to create this thunderbolt to kill Vritrasura. When the thunderbolt is created, Vritrasura says, use the thunderbolt. Yeah? So actually this is where we're beginning to see to the highest degree so far in the Bhagavad Gita, pure devotional service, or pure spiritual consciousness, which is completely ahoituki, unmotivated. That someone can just say, I give up my body. And actually, in our tradition, this is called sannyas. Sannyas means body, mind, and words in the service of Krishna. That is pure devotional service. And actually, the sannyasis in the Gaudiya tradition, they're entering into this mood of the Srimad Bhagavatam, of pure devotion, unalloyed devotional service to Krishna. Everything is just being used in Krishna's service. So the Bhagavatam now is teaching us, and in the next chapter, it's very interesting and very relishable. So if we can stay awake, we will relish unlimited nectar within the Srimad Bhagavatam.
That's why they are called three dandi. Three dandi. Body, mind.
Three dandas. Any other points? Okay. Shall we roll back?
Yeah.